Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report for today. It is election day in certain states. It is Tuesday, November 2nd, 2021. Critical elections in Virginia and New Jersey, of course, today. Now, I'm recording this earlier today because tonight, from 6 to 7 tonight, I will be a guest on Wisconsin Christian News Television. In Wisconsin, of course, John Rutherford from the, or John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute and Coach Dave Dobmeier. So it's going to be a good television show. Go to WisconsinChristianNews.com and there will be links to that show. Actually, when you see this, it should be archived. Anyway, all right. So this segment today, folks, is I'm going to drill down deep into a couple of aspects about what we're seeing today in terms of the envelopment of all of society, American society, Canadian, really all of Western society, into this global new world order. And I hate to use that because that kind of turns people off. But how this, where we are today, will lay out where we're headed and what happened in 2019, in 2020, what was planned was that determined where we are today. And I will show you the components of the criminal activity of the globalists, certain globalists, of Congress. I will show you, I will lay out a definitive argument of the end game. And the end game is essentially to establish a digital global currency. It's going to be rolled out in steps. Digital global currency, smashing the US dollar, but everything will be tied to a single identifier for each human being, just born to ready to die. It's going to encompass everyone. And a critical component of this, as you know, and I don't think I really have to sell this point, was the creation of a bioweapon. The problem, of course, being SARS-CoV-2 manufactured in a lab. And then, of course, the creation of what? Of the so-called ill-defined or ill-named vaccine. This is the infrastructure for what we're about to see happen. And I'm going to lay this out for you. Now, to display this first, go back in time a little bit. I should add this. Steve Quayle from his conferences, talking about AI, talking about transhumanism. Remember Hugo de Garis, if you were there and had the pleasure to see Hugo de Garis' presentation a couple of years ago in Branson, Missouri. And I spoke with him in the green room and we talked. And he gave me kind of a mini lecture back there. He was kind enough to do that. And he said, this is what everything is all about. It's about this transhumanist agenda. Now, I don't have the clip, but Steve Bannon was talking about transhumanism, the transhumanist agenda as well. Now, a couple of years later, I mean, kudos to Steve Bannon, but a couple of years after Steve Quayle. But nonetheless, but all of this is what we're seeing today. And this also includes the supply chain issues. This includes the inflation, the gas prices, the carbon neutral agenda, all of this combined. They're all criminal conspiracies to the larger criminal conspiracy, and that is the enslavement of the population, what is left of the population, I should say. Now, again, I'm going to go through this slowly because, I went into a deep dive here in investigations in this to really find out. I mean, I went through a couple of thousand pages from legislation back in 2020, okay, just to find out exactly where all of this, or at least one of the components of these the vax mandates and such started. Now, I want to go back in time, early 2020, I believe it is, with a video clip. It's a news article. The new digital driver's license will include your vaccine status. Now, this, let me rephrase that. This is an article by the Gateway Pundit. All right. So, but it contains a video from earlier, I believe it's 2020, if I'm not mistaken. Eric the Tech, is it 2020? Did you know? Eric the Tech, how are you feeling today? You feeling any better?
I do feel better today.
All right. Because actually, people sent me emails saying, you know, I didn't show you the emails because, well, I'm just that way. But, yeah, people are very concerned.
No, I'm doing good. I feel good. I'm just congested.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not the coof or nothing like that. It's just, It's just congestion. All right. But, I'm not sure if this was earlier. I think it was like March of 2020. That was featured within the article. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we play that video? And this tells a part of the tale. It gives the video itself. It's about one state, one license, driver's license. And remember the Real ID Act. If you think back, that plays into this as well. The states that were implementing the Real ID Act, and of course, in some states it's voluntary, others it's not. Well, so you've got to look at the historical things, the things that went on years ago, and then a couple of years ago, and then last year, and lay it out today. So with that, if we can play that video that's embedded in the Gateway Pundit article, and then we'll hit the article, and then I'm going to show you something that I think is going to blow your mind. We'll talk about this. So when you're ready, let's play that video.
Digital driver's licenses and IDs are coming to Utah. Fox 13 tech reporter Jordan Hogan has more on how soon we can expect these and how they'll protect your privacy.
Utah's driver license division is set to start a pilot with mobile driver's licenses and IDs. The mobile IDs will be stored on an app which is being called Secure by the division's director, Chris Karras.
We wanted to make sure the technology was at a place that it really could facilitate that level of security. And we believe that it's at that stage now.
This will change the way Utahns travel, bank, buy alcohol, and comply with traffic stops. A big difference to the physical licenses or ID cards is you can choose what information you share. For example, the digital ID would let you verify your age without giving away your home address or vice versa.
The mobile credential lets you facilitate the transaction, but only share what's necessary for it so that you get some control back over your data.
Right now it's being tested with 100 people to start, but the DLD hopes to open the pilot to as many as 10,000 Utahns by mid to late summer. The driver license division has until January 1st, 2022 to be ready to start making the digital licenses unless they show that the pilot has been unsuccessful.
But I don't see it in the near future changing the actual cost of renewing your driver's license. But if you choose to go with the application, there is a small additional fee for that.
The results of the pilot will be shared with the legislature, which will determine whether or not to roll out the mobile ID statewide. Jordan Hogan, Fox.
Okay. It's kind of funny because that is actually a YouTube video from Fox. Eric the Tech is laughing over there. The inside joke is, of course, we have not been on YouTube for quite some time, and we just got to notice that our channel is banned now, although the content remains, but we're banned. We got a strike for I'm not even sure what it was, but did you, I mean, it's kind of funny if you funny. Saw that. As if we care, you know, we have the coveted silver plaque of reward from, you know, from, Susan Wojcicki, whatever her name is, you know, but, we use that for target practice, but that aside. Okay. So you saw that video. If you were listening to this by way of the audio, you heard that rollout. That was from March of 2021, March 30th of 2021. And that was from Fox 13 News, Utah. Okay. So that said a few things. And that got the attention, of course, of the Gateway Pundit, because what was rolled out, of course, was, in fact, a new digital driver's license that will also include your vaccine status. Take a look at that headline here. And it may eventually include your credit score, travel records, and social credit score. Now, you saw that video. Did that make any mention of the social credit score vaccine status? And of course not. But, and it was opt-in. This is all voluntary, right? This is a soft intro. And even in Pennsylvania, Real ID Act, you want to comply? Great. If not, well, that's your decision. But now, as you see it, now the globalist, the party of Davos, these people have advanced this, and you can keep that up for a minute because this is pretty interesting. As you see, this Gateway Pundit article said, a reader sent this to us this morning. The program may also include the following information in the future. And it goes through health records, financial records, credit scores, and so on. Folks, it's not may. It's not may. It will include information such as your health records, including your vaccination status, although that's a very poor description of what we're seeing today, your financial records, credit scores, travel records, everything. And this is, you know what, folks, this is for your convenience. This is for your convenience. Utah is one of the test states for this DDL 2022. Or in 2022, it will be fully launched. And if you look at that image down there, above that big G, let's see, where is that? Is that above or below? This is kind of a funky, site, as you know. But what are digital driver's licenses? What are they? Utah, again, just to read from that image there, because some are visually challenged as you're driving or working, can't see a screen, but you're listening to this by way of Spreaker and other audio platforms. It says Utah is one of the test states for DDL 2022. It'll be launched fully, meaning it'll be launched fully next year. Below are some of the items that will be tracked or can be added at a later time. Again, this will not be an issue of voluntary compliance. This will be an issue of mandatory compliance. So, as stated, as opined by the Gateway Pundit, if you scroll right below that, just gently scroll, because I know how this site is, right below that picture, there you go. This will be the end of individual rights as we know it. Don't count on the Supreme Court to help you. There's no one coming to our aid. There's nobody coming to our aid. Now, Mississippi is also discussing this mobile ID program. Other states, believe me, are as well. You can count on this going into effect. But it's not going to be limited on your driver's licenses, because how many people have adult identifications through the DMV but don't drive? It'll be implemented to everyone. And how will that be? Through a digital ID, because your bank records are going to be tied to this as well. Your ability to purchase, access your banks. Banks, as we know them, will no longer exist. Everything will be digital. You're not going to have paper money. You're not going to have coins in the world market. Now, am I saying this is going to happen next week? No, of course not. It's going to be a while, but just bear with me here, because undergirding all of this, we saw some things happen or we didn't see some things happen last year that did happen. And it blew my mind when I started digging into this. Okay, so that kind of just is the backdrop, right? We're seeing this as a backdrop. What you're seeing on screen, the Gateway Pundit article, we're seeing this where, okay, Utah rolls this thing out. Hey, it's for your convenience. It's for your safety. It's for accuracy, this new digital driver's license that will include your vaccine status, meaning, of course, your level of compliance. Okay, now let's pull back from that. You saw that. Now, this is where you got to pay attention, folks, because this, this took me a long time to really vet and to investigate, to research, and to dig into this. Remember how everyone is saying, well, wait a second. Definitions changed in 2019 and 2020, 2021. A number of definitions changed. For example, the National Institute of Health removed the language on their website on gain of function. And this is amid the controversy that we saw with Rand Paul just drilling Fauci. The definition also of a vaccine was changed on September 1st. So you have number one, I'll use that first. The definition of vaccine changed on September 1st. No longer do vaccines prevent infection and prevent spread. No. Now a vaccine is defined as something that merely mitigates the damage from exposure to in this case, a bioweapon, and that would be SARS-CoV-2. Okay. So in the midst of, so you got a couple of things going on. Definitions are changing, and then the NIH covering up what they did, specifically what Fauci did to fund the research into gain of function. And again, I've also always said it is a bioweapon. But something happened before that this appeared in LifeSite News, and this caught my attention. It also caught the attention of Mike Adams. But it's not getting major attention here. Now, if you take a look at this article in LifeSite News, this is from last Friday, and this is where it gets really deep now. The title is Congress Made Crucial Change to Vaccine Definition Weeks Before COVID-19. That's the title of the article. Now follow me on this, because we're going to go through this not line by line, but issue by issue. And remember what I showed you before about the digital IDs. Remember about the changes in definition. Now we're finding out that Congress made change to vaccine definition weeks before COVID-19. And you may have said, well, wait a minute, you already said that. Well, not to the degree which you're going to see here. And this is mind-blowing. Initially, it starts out by saying, without a quiet change to federal law just before the onset of COVID-19, the experimental mRNA COVID jabs may never have been labeled as vaccines. Now think about that for a second. Never have been labeled as vaccines. In December of 2019, before the reported outbreak of SARS-CoV-2, the U.S. federal government signed a contract with one COVID-19 vaccine maker, Moderna, that stated mRNA coronavirus vaccine candidates are developed and jointly owned by both Moderna and the U.S. federal government. All right. Now, hold on here. This builds upon itself and it gets bigger and deeper. This article discusses the additional significant fact that also in December of 2019, the U.S. government, the federal government, changed the definition of biological product in the federal laws governing vaccine labeling, emergency use authorization, and approval. Now that sentence is an extremely important sentence. In December of 2019, the federal government changed the definition of what is known as a biological product. Now, think about this. Remember all the patents out there. Can you patent someone's DNA? Consider that as we go through this. Can you, of course you can't patent a person, right? Something from nature. But what if you change it? Oh, I'll stop there. I'll intentionally stop there. And folks, you can go on with that in your mind, okay? And your research. So in 2019, December, the definition of a biological product was changed. So without that change, the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines may have been required to be labeled as something other than a vaccine. So they could never have had vaccine mandates because there, without the change in definition of what a biological product is, there would be no vaccine. It would be an experimental product. But they had to change the definition of a biological product in the federal law. And I'm going to show you exactly where they did that. Because I didn't take this article's word for it. I went directly to the government website, read through, I don't know how many pages. My eyes were bleeding almost, but it was just crazy. So if you can put that, Eric, you can put that back up there just for a second here while I go through this. I want to show you where this is here. So in this article, if you scroll down just a little bit, the single sentence that there it is right there. New definition of biological product weeks before COVID. Now, this is where I started really drilling into this and starting to connect the dots. And coincidentally or not, Natalie Winters has something for us, which I'll show you momentarily. But as the article states, in order to become approved in the United States, vaccine manufacturers are required to submit a biologic license application to the U.S. federal government. U.S. federal law has vaccines included in the category of biological products. Prior to the 2019 change to the U.S. federal law, the legal definition of biological product was as follows. Let me read this. Biological product means a virus, therapeutic serum, toxin, antitoxin, vaccine, blood component or derivative, allergenic product, protein, except any chemically synthesized polypeptide. Now, without getting too far into the weeds, that parenthetical insert there, except any chemically synthesized polypeptide. Okay, now, look, I'm no scientist. I'm an investigator. So when something is inserted parenthetically and there's an exception to it, I pay attention to it, and so should you. Or analogous product and so on. But the key here is that except any chemically synthesized polypeptide. So the term biological products means virus and so on, and then parenthetically, except any chemically synthesized polypeptide. All right, so why is this important? The December 2019 change to the definition of biological product is found in the Further Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2020. And let me tell you something. If you want a mind-bending experience, dig into that. And I have a copy of that, which I'll show you. But it's hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of words, hundreds of, I mean, it's just a huge bill. But within that bill, this specific term biological product, the definition was changed. Out of the tens of thousands of words in this, that one definition was changed. Before coronavirus or COVID-19 was a factor. It changed everything. In section 605, biological product definition, section 351I, subsection I, paragraph 1, of the Public Health Service Act, which is 42 U.S.C. 262I1, is amended by striking that very sentence I cited earlier, except any chemically synthesized polypeptide. Why? Out of everything in this, why would they do that? Well, especially before COVID-19, and especially before the vaccines, or what they're calling vaccines, for COVID-19. The reason, of course, these products contain the vaccines, and you can keep that up there, contain the biological product, chemically synthesized polypeptide. The significance of this change is that the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, and again, I understand the misuse of the word vaccines here, but I'm using their terminology right now, chemically synthesize the SARS-CoV-2 spike, or the S-protein. Now, in August of 2021, both mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, there were two at the time, were given emergency use authorization by the FDA. They are nucleoside modified, meaning that they are chemically modified and programmed to synthesize the SARS-CoV-2 S protein. Now, what did I just say? Because I got lost in this too. Well, LifeSite News also said, what did we just write? Help me explain this. Help me understand this. They wrote this. Without getting overly technical, it should be noted that COVID-19 mRNA vaccines are the first products which use the technique of synthetic or chemically synthesized mRNA to be given emergency use authorization by the FDA. Okay, now, this is on pages 748 and 749. Okay, so hold that thought, because I'm a simple guy. Okay, I like simple things. I like to understand things. So whatever this jab juice is, obviously, they had to obviously change the definition of a vaccine to include, not exclude, but to include chemically synthesized polypeptides. Right? Earlier stated. So what's that mean? Chemically synthesized mRNA. And therefore, now, through this change, pre-COVID-19, Congress passed this. And through this change, miraculously, oh my goodness, they could see into the future. They could see into the future. Because, I mean, they knew that they were going to need this, or at least use this, not maybe not need it, but use this in these vaccines, which are not vaccines until they change the definition of a vaccine. So, after injected into humans, the chemically synthesized mRNA COVID-19 vaccines synthesize or produce a protein that's similar to the spike or S protein of the SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus. Proteins contain one or more polypeptides. Therefore, thus, ergo, well, the synthesis of the S protein is also described as polypeptide synthesis. All right, now, what did I just say? In other words, they're changing definitions to meet a creation that predates the SARS-CoV-2 outbreak. Now, there's a more specific explanation of the chemical synthesis of COVID-19 mRNA vaccines from the scientific literature. I'm not going to get into that because, man, you know what? You can read it. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. You can see it up there on your screen, and you can follow along. But, again, the S protein, the spike protein necessary for COVID-19 mRNA vaccines could be accurately described as a chemically synthesized polypeptide. Therefore, the definitions were changed. But why were they changed before the virus came out or before the bioweapon was created and before the, quote, vaccine, end quote, was created? Now, if you scroll down a little bit more, because this is really the takeaway from this, but this is only part of the story. This is like building a case in a criminal, this is like building a criminal case against someone, an entity or person or persons to show intent, to show conspiracy, to show complicity. And to show that we're all being lied to, of course, we know that, but this is proof positive. So, more evidence of a falsified pandemic. That's a question mark right there. It's unknown if the legal definition of biological product was amended by Congress to remove that specific phrase, except any chemically synthesized polypeptide. To permit foreseen chemically synthesized COVID-19 mRNA substance to be labeled as vaccines. Well, okay. That's kind of a CYA sentence, in my view. We don't know this for a fact, but man, you know, what are the chances? Look at the timing. And they even state so much by saying, however, the fact that this significant change was made on page 595 of a 716-page law, which is normally used for appropriating U.S. federal funding, suggests the possibility of an attempt at being conspicuous. I did research this law, or this legislation, and that's the second link, I believe, Eric the Tech, in what I sent to you today for prepping. Let me see. Yes. The third, it would be on that page, it'd be the third link, HR 1865. So there it is right there. Now I went through this and it was no small feat to go through this. There is the actual legislation, HR 1865, Further Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2020. And somebody in Congress made the change on page 595. And Eric the Tech, don't bring up the text because you're going to get lost in multiple pages. But that should show you right there. Okay. If you want to know, and the link will be in the program description box, and you can check my work. But on page 595, of this 716-page law that predated COVID, predated the vaccines, bada bing, bada bang, there it is. They changed the definition so they can roll out the mRNA shots and legally call it a vaccine. And this was passed in 2020. This, and you keep that up there because if you're driving, if you're doing something else, you'll be able to see this. I want this up there so you can see it. But this change to a U.S. federal law is also relevant to discussions which described, for example, updates to U.S. federal laws made soon before COVID-19, suggesting the possibility that COVID-19 may become or maybe some sort of falsified pandemic exercise, interestingly. But specifically, the timing of this change, before COVID in December of 2019, along with the apparent hurried status, burying the change on page 595 of a U.S. Federal Funding Act, again, strongly suggests the possibility, if not the probability, if not a fingerprint, not so latent, perhaps, an overt, obvious, clear fingerprint, that COVID-19 may be a falsified pandemic exercise which U.S. federal government, public health officials, and politicians were preparing for by attempting to legally protect themselves with several significant changes to laws and strategies and plans governing the regulation of public health, emerging threats, pandemics, vaccines, or related subjects. It's worth also worth noting this now from LifeSite News that it's also worth repeating that the U.S. federal government partially owns the mRNA COVID-19 vaccine. And soon before their imposition onto Americans, the U.S. federal government seemingly ensured COVID-19 mRNA vaccines would be legal. And this is how they did it. This is exactly how they did it. Through H.R. 1865, as you see on your screen, they changed the definition of a biological product to include a synthesized product, a man-made product, which allowed for the implementation of this vaccine, and they changed the definition of vaccine. Not only as a CYA thing, but also to allow this to be shown or to be promoted as a vaccine when it's not. But they did this before COVID. They did this long before COVID. Folks, what does this tell all of us? If you are a reasonable and sensible human being, the timing, the apparent conspicuous nature of this, of the 2019 change to the U.S. federal law, that by that change, now, it's now legal, they could legally label the mRNA, clot shots or whatever you want to call them as vaccines. This shows foreknowledge. No, let me take that back. This proves foreknowledge. You know, people say things and it's like, okay, yeah, okay. Where's the proof? This is the proof. I'm giving you the proof. LifeSite gave you the proof. Mike Adams is giving you the proof. This is just a kind of an encapsulation of the proof. I just gathered all this up and I showed you the bill. I showed you the law, the bill that became a law that changed this definition. I found it. I verified it. So wait a minute. What am I saying? I'm telling you that this was planned all along. And you know, I'm not going to hedge my words on this because what I see here is a criminal conspiracy against every person on the planet, but specifically using the mechanisms shown here, every person, God bless you. You okay? Eric the Tech, I worry about him. Every time he sneezes, I worry about him. I'm like a doting father-in-law. You okay, bro? Okay. All right. But this changes everything. This is proof. I just showed you proof. And I don't expect you to convince your obtuse neighbor, obtuse family member at the Thanksgiving table, or by Zoom, if they're that far gone, of any of this. But you should know. This actually took me about 4 hours to dig down into. This one point alone, about 4 hours to get into. And again, my eyes just were almost bleeding. I mean, to read through this appropriations bill and to find this change and the backtrack. Well, who made the change? Well, guess who made the change? Guess who? The lobbyists, the pharma lobbyists, as well as the members of the FDA and members of NIH and NIAID lobbied for this change, which was made. So who benefits? Everyone I just said, everyone I mentioned. But to what end? All right, hold that thought, because I'm building a case here to show you where we're at, where we're headed. Eric the Tech, how am I doing? Did I lose you?
Doing good.
Okay. Yeah, you'd say that anyway because, you know, you're a nice guy. All right. So what does this mean? And how can – I mean, aside from the obvious, let me go to another historical video. This is Dr. Lee Merritt. Now, again – this is dated. This is last year, I believe it is. Let me just double check this. I'm saying this and I've got so many notes here. I want to make sure that this is exactly what it is. April 19th, earlier this year. Now, Dr. Lee Merritt explains that mRNA technology is not a vaccine. But she was wrong. Not wrong, but she was wrong because they changed the definition, right? Because this obscure multi-hundred page bill, tens of thousands of useless words and definitions, they changed the definition under the Federal Appropriations Act. But Dr. Lee Merritt explains that mRNA technology, which is man-made, synthesized, it's not a vaccine. In animal studies, after mRNA injections have been administered to cats, when the virus, okay, now consider this because people are saying, well, what's going to happen to people that got the shots and so on? When this mRNA technology, not a vaccine technology, was administered to cats, when the virus arrived once again into the body of the cats, when the cats were exposed to the virus, it arrived like a Trojan horse, undetected by the cat's own immune system. This is what we're doing. This is at the heart of the technical aspect of the clot shots and the technical aspects of the bioweapon. But this is it. The virus multiplied unchallenged, and all animals involved in the experiment died from what? Various causes. Why? That's right. Their immune system couldn't fight off whatever they had, latent or otherwise. Right? So now we're seeing this picture. Thank you, Dr. Merritt, because you are absolutely correct in this, because they, except until they change the definitions. So what I'm telling you is this is a conspiracy. I'm laying this out, and I'm doing it very in step by step so everyone can understand it. So if you complain, well, you know what? You're doing this. Just get to the point already. You know what? Congratulations. I really appreciate the fact that you are really quick to understand. But, you know, a lot of people aren't. Me included sometimes. So kudos to you. Just follow along with me at your leisure. But let's watch this from Dr. Lee Merritt. This is back in April. And I believe the actual recording might have been made in January of 2021. Go ahead, if you can. Can you play that by, you can? Okay. Let's watch this. And please listen to this entire thing. Go ahead.
That is absolutely fascinating, Dr. Merritt. And you know what's funny? Without being a medical professional, without having read all the literature, I was coming to similar conclusions just from what I could discern from what was in the press. So I want to drill down a little bit more on these vaccines. You know, it's a hot topic. Just yesterday, Biden, we're recording on Thursday, January, what's today, the 14th or the 15th? The 14th. And just yesterday, Biden put out a tweet that he's going to ensure that every American gets this vaccine. I'm like, uh-oh, does that include me and my family? Do you have any concerns about the safety of the vaccine? And what, I mean, would you recommend to your patients, if you're practicing, to take that? Or would you, would it depend on their risk profile? What do you think?
Oh, I have lots of concerns, not the least of which is for the integrity and the moral turpitude of the medical profession, because, you know, we never force people to have a medical treatment. And no matter how you look at it, having a vaccine of any kind, whether it's a flu vaccine or this, is a medical treatment. Nobody should be coerced or forced to have it. And by the way, that's what we hung the doctors after World War II in Germany for, that principle, for violating that principle, and we shouldn't be doing it. But the medical, the safety thing is this. So I always tell people, you know, I'm not going to tell you whether to get a vaccine or not. You have to make your decision up, but you should be allowed to have informed consent. And we're, that is getting so bad that if you put up the package insert for a vaccine on your Facebook, you can get taken down. So let's just keep in mind here, we're not getting informed consent here. We might think we are, we're not. So if you look at the history of these vaccines just real quickly, these are experimental biologics. I don't even like to call them vaccines, because classically how vaccines work is this. You grow a bunch of the pathogens. So let's say it's measles. You grow the measles in a vat or in eggs, and then you take a portion of that and you make it less strong. You attenuate it. You make it weaker. And there's different ways of doing that. And then you inject it into people, and their own immune system sees that weakened pathogen, and then they react to it just enough that it puts it in their immunologic memory. And then when they're exposed to it the next time, they memorize it, and theoretically they can then better respond. That's what your real body does when it gets sick. You're just, without all this vaccination stuff, you get sick with a virus, you get perfect lifelong immunity for the most part, and it's over, okay? So, but how is this different? Well, this is not, they're not giving you a pathogen or a piece of a pathogen or a small piece with an adjuvant, which is a chemical that makes your immune system react more. What they're doing is programming mRNA. And mRNA is a little piece of, it's like DNA, but it's the messenger RNA. It's what makes proteins in the body. It's kind of like a computer chip that you put into a 3D printer, and then you tell it what you want it to make, and it prints it out, right?
Okay, can you pause that for a second? Right here. Okay. Now, just leave it there. Now, there's two things of importance, as she said. First of all, the informed consent, Nuremberg style. All right? They're taking away your informed consent by not disclosing the mRNA technology, but they're hedging their bets. And they hedged their bets. They attempted to cover their tracks by way of criminal conspiracy by changing the definitions before COVID even was a thing. So what she is saying here is these aren't vaccines. Well, they weren't until HR 18, whatever it was I showed you, became effective. You see where this is being laid out? Oh, and it gets better. Go ahead and continue.
Engineering, and this is the biologic equivalent. I make some mRNA, and it tells your body to produce certain things. Well, in this case, what they've done, they've made a piece of this mRNA to create in every cell of your body that spike protein, or at least part of it. And that spike protein, you're actually creating the pathogen in your body. So, you know, this is where it gets a little wishy about how much of that spike protein is actually being created. And I don't know how to find that. I can't find that, but I'm sure somebody knows. What happens is the problem, and this is the problem, and I'll tell you what happened in the animal studies. There have been four different vaccines and three different animal studies that I know of, in ferrets, in cats have a natural thing with the coronavirus. So it's cats and ferrets, and I think something else. They started after SARS, they did cats. And then after MERS, they did, which are all coronavirus pathogens that are more deadly. And they, after MERS, they tried it in ferrets and something else. And what happened is all the animals died. It wasn't subtle, okay? But they didn't die of the vaccine. What they died from was called immune enhancement or antibody-induced enhancement.
Okay, can you pause it right there?
Or antibody-dependent enhancement. Okay. They call it.
Just briefly and keep it on. Okay, so here's what she – and you heard what she said. But think about this. When people say, well, if this is – so, if this if this jab is so deadly, how come we're not seeing people, and I've asked this question, how come we're not seeing people die in wholesale lots? Because it's not the vaccine, as it's called, that kills you. Other causes kill you. Again, what she just said, look, what happened is all the animals died, but they didn't die from the shot. What they died from, she just said this, what used to be called immune enhancement, and now they call it ADE, or antibody-dependent enhancement. That's why we're not seeing wholesale deaths across the board. That's why you got a bunch of morons out there who are saying, see, I just had a sore arm for a day, and I had flu-like symptoms. You know what? They passed. See, it's safe. And anyone who says it's not safe, well, they're an idiot. They're not following the science. Folks, what I'm showing you here, in my view, is courtroom-ready proof that this was planned from the beginning. Not only was a bioweapon engineered, but this jab juice containing this synthetic product that they had to change the definitions for to call it a vaccine. And they had to expunge NIH records that talked about gain of function. This was a planned event. And no, you're not going to see people die in wholesale numbers because that's too obvious. We talked about this yesterday. And no, the vaccine is not going to kill you. What will kill you are other causes that, well, antibody dependent enhancement. This is proof, I believe, courtroom ready proof. Go ahead and continue.
ADE now, but it's they used to call it immune enhancement. Here's what happens. So they make the RNA, and so you're getting ready with this. You get the vaccine, and you do fine. All right. Now you challenge the animal with the virus that you're supposed to be immunizing against. So when they challenged those cats with SARS, what happened is instead of killing the virus or weakening, what they did is your this stylized immunoresponse that they've built into your system went out and coded the virus. So the virus came into the cat's body like a Trojan horse, unseen by the cat's own immune system. And then it replicated without checking and killed the cat with overwhelming sepsis and cardiac failure. And that happened in the ferrets. That happened every time they've tried this. And so let me just point out, we have never made it through an animal study successfully for this type of virus. We have never done this in humans before. At least we haven't. Maybe the Chinese have, and I'll talk about that in a second. But that's why we don't really have a track record of success. This vaccine was rolled out to distribution centers before they even made a show of caring about the FDA approving it. Do you realize that? I mean, it went out for distribution. I know in Nebraska, it was in the distribution center within days before the FDA even said they were going to approve it. What? I mean, I've never seen that happen before. And the longest they've really followed people after the vaccine is 2 months. Well, you see, that's not enough time to know that we won't have that antibody enhancement problem. And I will make this military point. This is a perfect binary weapon. There's no way I know exactly what that mRNA is programmed to, and neither do you, and neither do most doctors. The doctors can't get at that data. That's the guys at the very top of this project, okay? They know, but we don't know. They say it's to the spike protein, but how do we prove it? We don't know. So if I were China and I wanted to take down our military, that's easy. We've seen happen. I make it to something I could hook on to this coronavirus, like the spike protein or something else, another protein. And I just make an mRNA to that, but I know it doesn't exist in nature, so nobody's going to die from the vaccine. And then 2 years later, I release the whatever it is that I made. You see what I'm saying? The counterpart. And it causes this immune enhancement death. So it's a delayed death. That's what binary poisons are. They're delayed. I give you part one because I can walk away, and then you accidentally get in contact with part two and die.
Okay.
And
you can cut it right there. And that is exactly, in my view, the plan. That gives you, I think she did a marvelous job of explaining this. So to recap very quickly, what do we see? we saw the changes in definitions as early as 2019 before COVID was even the thing, a thing. We saw the changes in definitions to vaccines to include synthetic technology, mRNA technology. And that was by law. I showed you that. We know that the U.S. government, as well as Moderna, are in business together to create this synthetic technology that's being used upon you. And this is, okay, so this bioweapon was engineered at Wuhan. It didn't originate in the wet market, okay? And it was engineered through, it was engineered at Wuhan, but using the technology and funding provided by NIH, Francis Collins director, NIAID, Fauci director. And then this today. Natalie Winters, scoop of the day, scoop of the year. Over 20 Fauci-funded researchers have served at the Chinese communist-run Wuhan lab. Now, you've got to understand that this has not been going on for a week or a month. This has been going on for years. This has been in the planning for years, and that man, that garden gnome you're seeing, Anthony Fauci, was the bag man. He was the bag man. He was the money man. He was the allocator of funds. He was the guy who funded exactly what we're seeing take place today. He was the guy who gave money to Ralph Baric, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, who through grants, through NIH grants or NIAID grants, by way of NIH, Francis Collins. Even before COVID was a thing, even before the rollout of these non-vaccines. This, combined with the changes you saw of the definitions, if this does not prove the fact, number one, that there was knowledge and a forethought to the creation of a bioweapon, the creation of a jab that would act as a bioweapon in and of itself, or act as a to facilitate or destroy the immunity of the recipient, so the recipient would experience this autoimmune enhancement, basically a cytokine storm, as I understand it. So if you are infected by, as she said, like whatever else would, like a binary agent or some other problem, your immune system would just essentially turn on itself and you would die of AIDS. And oh, gee whiz. I mean, when I say AIDS, you're talking about autoimmune deficiency or antibody dependence enhancement. Same kind of thing, right? And who was the grandfather of that? None other than Anthony Fauci. So am I saying that he did this by himself? Absolutely not. I'm saying that when you look at this, this was a global or is a globalist operation. An Anglo-Asian or Anglo-Chinese, Anglo-Sino, whatever you want to call it. This was a globalist operation that is intended to be a time bomb, a biological time bomb. So those people out there who are saying, oh, yeah, look, I'm fine. I got the jab. I'm okay. Yeah, good. Let's hope that continues. Because when round two comes out or something else latent comes out, and this is why, you're not seeing wholesale death right now. You're not seeing people get the jab 5 minutes later, drop over. Well, in some cases you are. But it's not to the extent where it's so obvious that it's undeniable, right? It will be. but by that time it'll be too late. Folks, I hope that made sense to you. At this point, that concludes my opening statement. Again, this is the culmination of numerous hours of work and reading through documents, and I hope this made sense. The links will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. Now, if it is Tuesday, it is Tuesday with Stan Dale. By the way, again, this is early because tonight at when you see this, I will have completed my appearance with on Wisconsin Christian News TV station. John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute, and of course Wisconsin Christian News. Folks, if you have not subscribed, please do, and also donate to these people. This paper is marvelous in terms of for Christians. This is where Christians should be getting their news. Fantastic. So support them as much as you can. But if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesdays with Stan, and I thought of him so many times over the last couple of days, actually the last week. And in fact, he sent me an email. You know, the sun's acting up, and there's a lot for him to talk about. So with that, Stan Dale from StanDale.com, and of course the equally capable and hardworking Holly Dale. What a great pair they make. What a great couple they make. And of course, the information is invaluable. Stan, how are you, sir?
Oh, very good. You yourself, sir?
Very well. By the way, EMP Shield, you know, you talk about the sun. Folks, go to EMPShield.com, promo code Hagman, EMPShield.com. You're going to need these. You look at the sun. You're going to need these, okay? You're going to need more than one. EMPShield.com, code Hagman for $50 off. You purchase one for your car, your generator, your house, whatever. If you multiple purchases, look, you get discounts. And I got to tell you something, okay? These make great Christmas gifts. These make great Christmas gifts. Stan, I didn't mean to take away your time, but I just have to tell people now more than ever, based on what I'm seeing, these are important.
Oh, yeah. Whether it be the sun or whether it be the threat of nuclear war with, China, Russia, and possibly some Iranian stuff thrown in.
Yeah.
It's a good time to have an EMP shield or two around the place.
Yeah.
You want to keep listening to the news even.
Well, yeah. If you want to save your equipment and, you know, people have a tendency to think it's all or nothing, you know, like everything's going to be blacked out, fried, cooked, and, you know, it's not going to matter. Look, folks, it's not, it doesn't have to be that way, nor will it necessarily be that way. That's why you need the EMP shield. Okay. You, sir.
Now, all right, talk about the sun. We'll get onto that there here. Let's see here. Slide 43. If you go over there, Eric, let's look at slide 43 today.
Slide 43.
And it will bring up last night late the images of the sun up close. This is the close satellite imagery. And you'll see here a coronal mass ejection kind of out to our lower right, you know, of the planet. So in other words, it wouldn't aim straight at us. But it was a mighty burst, and there have been several of these in the last 7 days. So as I've been saying, the sun is increasingly more active and more unpredictable. Now, if you want to just have a – I don't know whether you can do that with your server or not, but if you click on slide 44, it actually brings up the video in a GIF showing you some of the activity on the sun from the 29th of October forward. And you can see what I'm talking about, how active this thing is. And the little white dots you're going to see on the screen are particles, not just, you know, rays or wavelengths. These are particles striking the satellite camera. So you can see that it was very active there. Now, we're now in, on mine, I'm toward the end. And then you get to the 1st of November, which will be at the end of this video, and you will see a mighty set of coronal mass ejections, which are very, very impressive. Just give it time to get there. Where are you now? Yeah, you must be getting close now. There you go. Whoa.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Okay. This means a lot more to you visually when you see this rather than reading it on space weather or something. Oh, we had an N1 class flare come off of the sun and some coronal mass ejections, you know, blah, blah, blah. But this is impressive. That's why I put that up there. I'll leave that up there. I'll leave that up there for the week. But
so that blast was November 1st, right?
Yesterday, I think it was later in the evening, as I recall.
But, oh yeah, I can see that the counter, which is covered by the lower third there, but yeah. Okay. Man, that's.
And here it comes. Here's some more. There you go. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Because of the animations, I don't always have time today, you know, in the daytime to get this stuff done as far as the long animations. But so I did this last night. And hopefully later tonight we'll see some good news on the final count with the Virginia race. I was just thinking about that because I was watching the lead up to it in the polls.
Yeah, I'm anxious. You know, I'm telling you what, McAuliffe, you know, if he wins, Stan, there's something terribly wrong because he self-destructed last night. I'm not sure if you saw, he self-destructed last night. The sheriff asked him a question. He just, he tried to talk his way out of it. The question about defunding the police and not backing the police and law enforcement. And he just said, I'm not going to dignify that with an answer.
I know. It is so laughable that, you know, the rest of the world is laughing at Biden and our political situation. And I guess for those of us that are conservative Christians, we're not laughing. We're kind of very sad, but hopeful that this situation will reverse and we can return to sanity for a while longer, now, I'm not getting off the sun for a while. I want to get over to slide 45. And it's the magnetic line image that was taken on the 31st of October. And if you look in the top left part, you'll see kind of a double spot there. And that's the one that's now moving into Earth-directed position. The lower right was where all those big flashes and CMEs and stuff that you saw, those flares in the last video, they were coming off the lower right. But this is the upper left, which in stellar terms is called the northeast, not the northwest, but the northeast quadrant of the sun. And that area is very suspect. I mean, it's not as big as what produced those flares over there, but this one has been bubbling and shooting up, you know, long burning arcs, you know, like lightning, except they're magnetic tubes that are very hot filaments. So I've been watching it now for probably 3 or 4 days, and we'll see what happens as we progress through this week. It's slightly closer now by about 5 degrees than it was on the 31st. Took it on Halloween evening, but as I say, I gather these things during the week and pick the, you know, the impressive ones, whatever. Now, the long-range solar camera on SOHO, at slide 41, if you click on the image, it'll take you to the animated GIF of that further out than the one in orange we're looking at, which is a closed camera. And this shows you, even on the long-range UV, that the sun has been throwing particles out since the last couple of days of October. And now, when we get to the end of this, into the November date, there you go. There's the first flare. And then there'll be another one. And these things reach way out. If you see that little white circle in there, that's the sun. And so from the 29th to there, it's a very active sun. Another very strong reason, very clear and present danger about warning about solar EMPs, solar coronal mass ejections and flares that produce EMPs on the Earth. Now, if we get through this next, three days, I guess, without something being Earth-directed, then I think we're going to have about 24 days of kind of quiet sun. At least it looked like that on the backside in the heliographic image I looked at. Wasn't much to look at, so I didn't put it up today, but there's that. Now, I want to move over to La Palma. And now I did some interesting research this last few days, getting imagery in 3D of the La Palma situation. Now, slide 46 is taken from a site, which is, you know, you can go into La Palma and look under 3D representations of the earthquakes. If you click on the picture in slide 46, and it's a zoomable picture because it's big. In the top picture, it's the same as the bottom picture when you get over to that link there. But there's no like legend on the right side. Now, this is what I took from the 30th of October. It was the most current one I could get off of that 3D site. But the importance of it, and look at the bottom image. I scoot down to the bottom, Eric. Okay, this is a clear view of La Palma and of Cumbre de Vieja, the volcano that's producing all this magma and lava and stuff. Okay, the top group or cluster of earthquakes is over the last 3 days. And they're smallish, but they're very, there's a lot of underneath the fissure and the various eight vents that opened up. But down deeper, 20 miles down, the reddish stuff is also, you know, like those are up to Richter, I think three. We'll check it in a minute, maybe 3.5, some of those. And the reason this is important is because that deep down activity just started in the last 10, 15 days. And that indicates that the crust is cracking, you know, is earthquaking way down deep to allow the pressure of the lava underneath it, the magma, to push up and to form another, you know, volcanic eruption. Now go back to slide 48 this time. Click on slide 48. Now this is from a place called storymaps.arcgis.com. Now this is powered by a friend of mine's from many years ago from Esri. Dr. Jack Dangerman's website, they've produced technology to allow you to rotate in 3D around these clustered earthquakes. And if you click on the earthquakes at the bottom, Eric, and zoom the map up, you'll see that these deep earthquakes in this one on the 30th were under three. I don't see any over at the moment except for that one that's in the lower right corner. And that's why the ratings went up to 3.7. But for the most part, these are under three. And at the top part of earthquakes, they are, you know, there's one three-ish in there. I can't see where they even put the value on it, but it's big. Now, these are clustered on the center line of the Cumbre de Vieja Ridge up above there. You can see that. And if they were more to the right, and they are tending to go to the right, this could be that a large earthquake might release under the right side of what you're looking at on the island. And that shock, if it's big enough, could loosen the overburden, you know, on the left side, you know, what we're looking at, in other words, the west side of that ridge. And that could cause the landslide that we've been kind of toying with to see whether it really happens. And that could cause it to drop into the sea and create the tsunami. Again, I stress, I think that the tsunami will go southern hemisphere more than northern hemisphere when it heads out toward the Americas. Still better to be prepared, you know, for what might be hitting. But we're not out of the woods there yet. And on our website, on standeo.com, Holly has put in there, in one of the links there, I think it's about link number 4 or 5 under Earth Changes. If you click on that, it says dunes of volcanic ash form on La Palma. It's kind of an interesting thing to look at because it makes not sand dunes, but gray ash dunes, which are, you know, like little glass crystals in essence, you know, coming out of the eruptions and the venting. So, it's pretty unusual, I guess, but, it's definitely not a walk on the beach. It's, it'd be kind of sanding your soles of your feet like sandpaper if you walked over that. And if you breathe it, it's even worse. So it's not through. So those areas there that I've shown from 46 to 48 in the slides, if you click on those two on the right, that's the same website. And then on the left under La Palma's, you know, Spain's website for that. I check that, you know, again daily if I were you. And so I put those links in there so you can have a look at them. Okay.
The images, I just want to just check the images that you showed about the earthquakes. So, the people that viewed them, the island, and then below that were the dots, and then below those dots were additional dots. That indicates depth, right? The location.
Right. Okay. Right. They, those are the deep down. They're about 20 miles down that cluster at the bottom. And those at the top are under 7 miles. So.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are interesting to watch too, because that's when things start to happen, you know, vents crack and lava flows out. But the deeper ones I am very interested in, because they can signify a much bigger movement down there. All kinds of things can happen. And it's anybody's guess at this point in time. I mean, it's not immediate to, okay, we can rest, or immediate to, you know, we're at threat. So anyway, just keep checking those websites that I put up there during the week and see what you find. I'm going to go into a lighter subject for a moment before I get into the heavy, you know, political stuff. But down in slide 38, if you click on the picture, Eric, I noticed something while I was working on some of my updates for the Garden of Eden, something very unusual. And in just visually looking at the Google Earth map of where the Garden of Eden is. Now, if you zoom it up so that you can see the text, just click on it. I should, there you go. Okay. Now, this green outline is like the birth canal of a human woman, you know, delivering a baby. And up at the top, we see Gan Eden, Garden of Eden, land of, in yellow. Lake Victoria is underneath that, and Lake Victoria is outlined with a green, subtle green outline. And that is like the womb where mankind was, you know, the concept of mankind was formed, and God then went over here to the mountain of God, you know, the land of Eden there. And the mountain of God is El Goel and Gai, and that's where, you know, the Ngurho crater is, just north of that, just a bit there in the picture. And that is where Adam was formed, and then Eve out of his rib. So it's like the fertilized egg, you know, of a human baby, just representing it symbolically. And it travels down that green line, the birth canal, and it then gives birth down there in the Danakil Plains, off the coast of Saudi Arabia, or Yemen in this case. Now, I just found it interesting to look at that, because man, Adamic man, was born there, gave birth, and went across the Red Sea at that point. It was a very narrow thing at those days. And onto the Saudi Arabian continent. At that time, it was separated from Europe. And you can see by the red outlines where I thought it separated. Now, so Adamic man then is born into the world and comes over to Saudi Arabia, the Arabian subcontinent there. And that's where Atlantis was, where the fallen ones, at least the Poseidon group, were doing genetic experiments, making chimeras out of half human, half animal type, you know, eggs that become these beastly things, these chimeras. And so I just found it interesting. This looks like the birth of Adamic man going into and interacting with the world's satanic creations. Can you see my graphic illustration here?
Yeah, very well.
It was really symbolic of the birth of man, Adamic man, anyway. Anyway.
Wow. And you know, I don't discount any of this. I mean, I don't discount this at all. And I think this is important because, well, for a number of reasons, and especially the cradle of civilization, how this is depicted, how you depicted this, and I love it. I love it. Again, the Bible is a gift that keeps on giving, in my view, in terms of knowledge, relevance, and you know, today's events. So go ahead and continue, sir.
Okay. Now, there was an article about an asteroid on slide 49, an asteroid that may be as big as two NFL football fields end to end is due to zoom past Earth this week. And when you read that, you think, oh, holy cow, I better get out there and have a look. You know, this thing is going to pass at a distance of 14 times the distance to the moon. So it's not really, you know, something to worry about at this moment, unless it has an entourage of smaller bits and pieces that do give us some meteoric showers. But other than that, I think this is too far away to affect the moon or to affect us. But still, it makes good headlines, I guess, when they say that it is passing close. But they do qualify and say that it's not really that close when you get down the article. Still, these things are happening. And as we've seen in the past year or two, there are a number of instances where an asteroid passes so close to the Earth that it's inside the 25,000 mile distance where we have our communication satellite networks and constellations. And they didn't even see it coming. And this something this size, they could still miss it if it's not reflecting light that our telescopes pick up. The only way you can possibly see these things is from infrared radiation, from the sun illuminating infrared. But that doesn't always work because it has to be facing a certain way and soil type has to be a certain type. So there are about 5,000 of these things out there that they haven't quite found them yet, but they know they're there because of the gravitational distortion they do on various things that they pass by. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff.
Be enough to yeah. blow your hair back walking outside. Okay. Yeah.
Some of these, you know, the killer asteroid, if it ever hit us, would be so quick and so, you know, complete that you wouldn't have time to even do anything but maybe half a blink before the whole planet was on fire. So you'd be gone. So I'm not too worried about it, but it's interesting. Yeah. Okay. Some weather changes. Let's look at slide 52. Click on the, see here, the picture first. Now that's a big picture that you can zoom up, Barry. And, the top part of it is the temperature changes from 1850 to now, 2021, in the month of June. And you can see that in the 1850s through to 1940, 1935-ish, that the temperature, you know, anomaly was, you know, fairly below the mean for this whole period. In other words, the heating of the planet was not really excitable there. That was just kind of normal in that range. But when you get to 1940, you know, into the World War II period, and after that, you see about a 45-degree angle set of variances in the monthly temperature anomaly, you know, the deviation from the norm, getting up to where we are now to 0.8 degrees centigrade anomaly. Now, when you get up to 2 degrees anomaly, either up or down, you either have an ice age or a really severe drought, you know, hot weather type event that's a planet, you know, life form killer. 2 degrees negative in our mean temperature anomaly would put us into the last ice age. So the opposite of that would happen when you get a plus 2 degrees. So we're about 40% of the way to real problems with the heat from the sun on this graph. And understand it's coming from the Berkeley site, which, you know, they're kind of lefty and go for global warming for mankind's gases and animal gases and cars and you know, all that kind of stuff, blaming it on human population and animals from their viewpoint. But disregarding their viewpoint, the facts are there that we are seeing, you know, an increase. Now, the top graph was that you were looking at first in June there, that's a graph of the whole planet. But if you go down one graph, Eric, it's the land only, and it shows you that the land only ran a little bit behind, started in 1970-ish, where it started to climb at this accelerated rate, going, you know, up the graph to where it's at above 1 degree centigrade. So the average of the planet is 0.8, which we're looking at the first graph, but this one on the land shows that it's already to 1 degree centigrade on the land. And if you go down to the ocean, the third graph down, Eric, that one is ocean only in June for that period of time from 1850 to now, it went up 0.6. So the land got hotter than the ocean. Why? Well, if we go back to the to that slide and hit on the text, this gives an explanation of it, showing that cloud cover varied over the ocean. The cloud cover does block sun, and so there was more cloud cover to block the sun, I believe is where the article went. And then the land had other activities, but not as much cloud cover. Let's see here. Look at an equitable chance. Okay, let me see if I got it in the next graph here. Okay. In slide 53 text, comparison of overlapping one-year estimates at six-month intervals of net top-of-the-atmosphere annual energy flux from the clouds and the Earth's radiant energy. I'll summarize that. It's a long-ass sentence they put in there. But basically, they look at the energy from the top of the atmosphere. It's, you know, called the TOA. And you can see that there in the text in the graph. And that's in slide 53 there, yeah. So in essence, what they're saying here is it's not due purely to human or animal activity or industrial complexes. This is due to other things that are part of a normal progress from the heat from the sun and our absorption of it to the age of our planet and thinning of our atmosphere and a lot of other factors. But in the graph that's on that, you go up above that, click on the graph in that slide. No, sorry. When I say up above it, I mean click on the picture there. Okay. And the top of the atmosphere, if you click on that graph, and yeah, there you go. Okay, the top of the atmosphere is the TOA, and that's where it's radiating out, and the blue graph is where we're sucking it up. You know, we're absorbing the heat. So it shows that there's a very close correlation with the way the planet takes it in. But yet in the 2016 area, 2016, there was a wide variance between what was emitting from our upper atmosphere and what we were keeping here. But now we're going to see a climb and get closer together. And I suspect our blue dot graph will get equal to or above the red one at some point.
So was that Donald Trump's fault? I mean, the 2016.
Oh yes. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. Yeah, yes, yes.
Yeah. I mean, seriously though, what would cause that deviate? Well, so there was a deviation back in looks like 07 to 09, and then on the red side, and then a deviation on the blue side later. What would cause that?
Well, you know, what was happening with the clouds and stuff, they say that the cloud cover affects the ocean temperature, which is, you know, on average much lower, you know, like it's about 60% of what the land temperature rise is. What is causing that is cloud cover, but it now then we're going into a period of time. In fact, if you looked at that graph on 53, which you are there, the mean line is increasing. There's no question about it. This, the absorption of the energy from the sun is increasing at about a 20 to 30 degree angle, you know, from 2005 till 2019 when they did the study. There's no doubt that we are increasing and looking at drought and stuff like that. They do have in slide 54, they do have the thing in English. The one in slide 53 was from their paper on this. And, you know, as I said, it's a long sentence and it's hard to hold a concept, you know, that's not familiar to you anyway. But in slide 54, it says a trio of recent studies published from June through September of this year have concluded that observed warming in the first two decades of the 21st century is more likely due to increases in absorbed solar radiation than humankind's emissions of greenhouse gases. Get that. This is coming, you know, from Berkeley, that it's more the solar radiation, this warming of the planet, than the emissions of greenhouse gases. While the study does contend that mankind's emissions have an effect in the observed warming, data shows it to be a small one. And I think the figures I read were like 6%, of the global warming was due to greenhouse gases and emissions. And when this comes from a left-wing research facility there in California, you know, you have to kind of sit up in your seat and say, wow, then there's something to this. And,
they can publish this all day long. No one's going to cite it because it's, you know.
It's not what the narrative should be, right. You know. Mm. Now, there's a lake in Turkey. It's Lake Tuz, T-U-Z. And it has dried up. I think it's for the first time in 100 years or something. Anyway, it's a big lake. It's about 643 square miles. And if you click on the picture, you'll get a look at the flamingos out there, which are, you know, standing in water. It's an old picture. This is basically a very salty lake, which is what the flamingos like to to drink and eat, which gives them their red color like it does over at the Enduro. Now, if you click on the text, you'll get to the whole article, excuse me, which says that Central Turkey's Lake Taz has been a breeding ground for generations of colorful flamingos who migrate there each year to feed on the shallow lake algae, and that's what gives them their color. However, a rapidly changing climate and unsustainable agricultural practices have led to a drought that killed thousands of flamingos this summer. Now, it's not only the solar-caused drought, it's their kind of the way they preserve their water and how they distribute it to the crops and things like that. They haven't done it properly, and we haven't either in California as well. But due to that, the drought effect is much harder there than it, you know, it should be. If you look at the graph down at the bottom of that article down away, so you'll see the lake itself, and that he found all these dead flamingos there, the photographer that did this, about 5,000 of them. They died because they just couldn't get water and feed there, and they didn't know where to go. Okay, and that's over on that side of the world, Turkey. And we've got our problems over here on our side, and India has its problems. So the drought, these problems we're seeing with the drought are planetary. Also, in, let's see, where is it? Okay, in that area where that lake is, the government keeps telling people that they shouldn't use groundwater for this agricultural, you know, and for the agriculture. And people aren't listening. Of course, we're doing the same thing over here. You do it in Nevada, all kinds of places. There are about 120,000 unlicensed wells in that Lake Taz region. And everybody's pumping out water as if that water would last forever. But of course, groundwater comes from like a underground tank of water out of rock. And when you replenish that, you know, it takes hundreds of years for it to replenish. People are leaving their homes and farms, just like they're doing here in California. The drought is bad, very bad. Oh, and on drought, go above slide, I forgot to put numbers on the top three rows. Sorry about that. But if you go to the third row down, first picture, you'll see a picture of a drilling rig. If you click on that, after the show tonight, I'll put the proper numbers on that. Looking at numbering, it would be slide 55 when I get the numbers put in later. This is a picture of a well that was dug in Tanzania by our friends over at Elion Tours. They organized that last thing about 2 or 3 years ago when we collected money to drill for water nearby to here, but not at this exact location. This location worked, and they actually got water when they drilled here. So if you click on the text of that of slide, what would be 55, you'll see the commentary on this, and this well will take care of the basic needs. You know, it won't make them flush with water, but take care of the basic needs of 2,000 people, just that well alone. It was funded by some other Christians that put in another gob of money to try to do it. And this time the well hit, which is really good news. But again, it will only last as long as the aquifer down there that they're draining, but enough to get over the current drought problem.
I remember, a couple of years ago, this is what you were talking about, right? Okay. So this is going to save people from having to walk like, you know, I don't want to make fun of this. I mean, this is going to help a lot of people.
Yeah. And it'll save the young women, you know, the teenagers and, early 20s who, you know, they have to, before the well is dug, they have to walk 3 to 5 miles a day and carry maybe 5 to 10 gallons, or if they've got donkeys, or, you know, they can put them on the donkeys. But 5 to 10 gallons of water a day, at least in one trip, go walking up there, get their things filled with water and come back from, you know, some local water source or lake at an altitude sometimes. So this puts it all right to their neighborhood so that they don't have to go that far and the fresh water is there, you know, day and night. It does help them. And when you think about it, if you have like 5-10 gallons of water for a household of 4 people, That's got a service to cook your food, do your cleaning of your clothes and your body, and give you the water you need to drink. And, you know, the average person could do well with, especially in this heat over there, at least a gallon, gallon and a half of water a day. They don't get it, but they've got to take what they need out of that. And so their bodies have acclimatized to that, I guess, over the years. Still,
you know, I think people would be interested to hear this. You know, that we often say, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, think about this, folks, okay? Where that statement comes from. In situations like this, where you have some water designated for personal hygiene, and you got a family, okay? So usually the family, in the family, the oldest gets the bath water first, and it goes down in age to the last person, or at least that's how it was in the West, you know, the old West here. And by the time you get down to the baby, and it's kind of yucky. But again, it's the prioritization by age, eldest first. And by the time you wash the baby, it's don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's where that statement came from. But a little bit of trivia. I don't know where that came. I mean, I don't know. A little bit of trivia. Well, carry on.
No, it's good trivia. It just makes me, when I saw this article come in from Pendeley, who is Ron Daly and a friend of ours, and I am always reminded, just when I'm brushing my teeth, how it was in Tanzania when I was doing that. I had a bottled water, and I poured half of it into a glass, and that's how I rinsed my toothbrush, and you know, wash out the old toothpaste from your mouth with that much water. Whereas here, you turn on the tap, you kind of go, what time is it? Oh, yeah, right. Brush teeth, and the water's running all the time. You're thinking and brushing, and then you wash out. You know, how much more we use because it's there, and we turn on the tap. It's so easy. A couple of generations, you know, have come and gone here in America with all this water available to touch, and don't think about all the other countries because they're not in our neighborhood, where they have to fight for the water every day just to survive. Yeah, you know, walking, trekking, drilling, get the water. And this is how important this is. It's a matter of life and death for the people in areas, not only in Tanzania, but in India and Africa and other places. I mean, I just remember my trip over there and how water was like gold there. You drive down the street and there are stands filled with bottled water, you know, with the price on some dollars I couldn't read, but you know, it was the important thing was water. And I'm just so pleased that finally they got a well over there that had water. It's about, I think you said it was about 60 meters deep, I think, which is about 60 meters deep. So that would be about 180 to 190 feet deep, which is about the depth we tried in the other one would be what we were going to, but we went actually deeper and still had a dry well on that one. Sad. But anyway, progress is being made. And on that website, you can see it's a Facebook page. You can make comments and encourage them. These people, if you scroll down the page on that the text link, you'll see other pictures of what Pendeley and his company and his church have been doing, taking food to hundreds of Tanzanian neighbors of theirs in various little villages, you know, grain, rice, food that they need, and in some cases like this, water. That'll be probably easier for some of these villages to get now. They just go to the town well. But yeah, these guys have been doing it themselves, trying to be proactive. It's like, what is it? Give a man a fish, he eats for a day. You teach him to fish, he eats for a lifetime. Well, give them a well, and they can provide their own water, and they can maintain the well. That's what's being done there. And anyway, that was just something I wanted to share. You know, off thought there. Now, Middle East. How much time we got left?
We've got, let's see, what's that? 20 minutes.
20 minutes. Okay. 62. Okay. In slide 56, it would be, it's the third row down, second one in. You see a picture of that sheikh. That's King, let's see, King Salman. Yeah. Okay. That's MBS's dad. Okay. Now, in the text of the article, the Saudis are normalizing relations with Israel. Now, this is important. I want you to remember this because we're going to go to another slide in a minute, which ties in with this. It hasn't been widely known, but it was being done behind the scenes between the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. The nub of the story is that during the discussion with the United States National Security Advisor Sullivan and MBS, King Salman's son, they raised the issue of Saudi Arabia normalizing relations with Israel and that MBS had not rejected the idea out of hand. This is on October the 20th. Okay. Now, for them to normalize relations is really important because the Abrahamic Agreement, the covenant between some of the Arab nations, should go to all of the Arab nations, and that will be, I'm pretty sure, the basis for the peace agreement with the many nations that the Antichrist will sign, whether it be MBS or someone else. This, we're now seeing the Abrahamic Convention or agreement come closer to fruition with all the major Arab nations. If Saudi Arabia does come and sign that agreement, that Abrahamic Accord for Saudi Arabia, if that is signed, that means all the other nations in the Middle East, about 34 to 40 of them, depending on who gets on board, will follow Saudi Arabia's lead. Saudi Arabia is the giant in that area for these kind of relations. Now, okay, now let's see here. Let's get to attack Iran. Overthrow. Right. Let's go to the first slide, top row left. You see a picture of Mohammed bin Salman, King Salman's son, in his red robe. And click on the article. Saudi plot to overthrow Lebanese government thickens. Now, Lebanon is to the north of Israel. Its northern border it joins, and it's to the left or west of Syria and Iran. The Lebanese government is, they're in disfavor. And what has happened is, let me just scroll down the article here. Okay. Basically, what has happened is that the Saudis have told the ambassadors, the ambassadorial team from Lebanon, which is in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, they told them, get out of town, leave. And a number of other Arabic nations who side with Saudi Arabia have said the same thing. Let's see if I can find the name of them. Okay. On October 29th, Saudi Arabia gave a 48-hour notice to the Lebanese envoy to leave Riyadh. Okay. And they banned all imports from Lebanon. In other words, they're cutting Lebanon off in a big way. The decision was immediately followed by Kuwait, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates. They all gave 48-hour notice to the Lebanese envoys to leave their capitals. See, following suit was Saudi Arabia. UAE also imposed a ban on its citizens traveling to Lebanon. That's in episode 5 under Boom there on that page. The Lebanese Prime Minister Mekati said that he regrets the decision taken by the Saudi Arabian government and advised his information minister, Kurdahi, to make an appropriate decision by considering the national interest in order to solve the diplomatic crisis between Riyadh and Beirut. Now, why is this important? Lebanon has been housing a lot of Hezbollah, Iranian operatives there to launch missiles into northern Israel. It's joined right to Israel, landmass, just a line separating the two of them. Whereas, with Iran, it's got to jump a couple of countries to get over there or go into Syria and come down that way. It's a very nice place to launch attacks on Israel, to put ground troops in, et cetera, et cetera. So when the Saudis tell Lebanon, get in line, they're saying, don't be attacking Israel. Join with us into this new consortium and we'll sign this peace agreement and have, a peaceful Middle East agreement between Muslims and Jews. So this is just saying that the thing we've been expecting is coming back into the light. The next thing I suppose we'll be seeing is the alien presence after probably exchange of a nuclear bomb or two between Iran and its proxy countries and Israel. Now, the United States has given a B-1 bomber activity in that area. It's being supported by the Israeli Air Force. So a B-1 bomber can carry nukes. Are they going to, the Israelis going to give a nuke to the B-1 bomber to hit Iran or to hit Syria, Damascus, let's say? I would think that's on the cards. If you look at the top row, third slide over, that would be, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 6 on that. That would be slide 60 when I get the numbers up there. It says Syrian reports, rare daytime Israeli strikes target Hezbollah sites near Damascus. I remember the biblical thing, overnight Damascus had become a ruinous heap. The daytime strikes reportedly target ammunition depots and other advanced weapon systems heading toward Hezbollah and other Iranian proxies in the region. See, they're using proxies, the Iranians are. And so Syria is the location, and Damascus is where that definitely is. So is Damascus going to disappear overnight from a nuclear attack at some point in time? These news stories are kind of telling you, watch Damascus and watch, you know, the use of nuclear weapons, in essence. This isn't started yet, but it's getting close. Let's see here. Okay, an article in slide 59, which is top row, middle one. The Israeli columnist there, despite the economic crisis in Lebanon, or perhaps because of it, the threat from Lebanon is more dangerous than ever. She noted that the head of Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hassan Nasrallah, has engaged in a blood-for-blood discourse towards Israel, expanding this to include vowing revenge for Israeli attack against Hezbollah terrorists operating inside Syria, of course, to Damascus she's referring to it as well. You know, this is biblical. It's clear and present, and I just think what we'll be seeing here shortly is the eruption of limited warfare, nuclear warfare in the Middle East. And if you look at slide 57, that's second row right slide, the Israeli Defense Force approves plan to attack Iran. Here's when it's ready. As talks aimed at returning Iran to the 2015 nuclear agreement remain stalled, and Tehran continues to get its unprecedented uranium enrichment, the Israeli Air Force has embarked on a highly specialized training program in preparation for a strike on the Islamic Republic. Now, does this mean that they're going to hit Iran directly, or are they going to hit Damascus, where they're focusing these advanced weapons that they're going to attack Israel with? There's top three articles up there.
But by the way, I just want to let you know, we're having some issues here. We're unable to load some of these with that website. So sorry about that.
Oh, you can't get the story? Or?
No. Just on that particular site, we're having some issues. So.
All right. Sorry. Well, anyway, the Israelis are being quite, you know, open about what they're doing. And you think, well, you know, they're telling the enemy what they're doing, but everybody knows over there that Israel is getting ready for, you know, action. And it's no secret. So we over here kind of go ho-hum about it, but I'm telling you, when that happens, it's going to be, you know, the cat amongst the pigeons in the Middle East and in the world at large, because this has far-reaching implications if the Israelis use a nuke to destroy the facilities in Damascus or in Iran, for that matter. But with our B-1 bombers sitting over there to help them, they're, you know, flying around over there, the Israelis have some big clout potentially to make the whole area a war ground, a battleground. Hey, did you know that last month that we had a submarine go aground or hit an underwater landform in the Chinese Sea?
Yes. It hit something, didn't it? To my understanding, we didn't have a clear explanation of what happened exactly.
No, it was a Wolf class submarine. You can click on the picture and see what, you know, the Wolf class submarine has. If you look at the picture, you can see it has 12 vertical launch Tomahawk, you know, cruise missiles in the front of it. This was originally designed and released in 1997, this submarine, the Wolf class. It has nuclear power, but it also has auxiliary diesel engines and advanced sensing devices in the nose cone there in the sonar dome. There's more in that nose cone than what they showed there. I did see that when I was researching this. A few of the crewmen were hurt. So it's like, you know, where did that landmass come from? And I'm wondering whether it was something that the Chinese started and didn't report in, you know, the bathymetry worldwide. They started building an island up, you know, like they've done before, to make it a, you know, military landing spot or a base or whatever, but they hadn't completed it and stopped. Or was there something like, you know, a volcanic, you know, mound or dome forming down underneath there? But anyway, our ship did not see that, or if it did, it didn't see it in time to turn and avoid the collision with it. So with minor repairs, they say they can get it back into operation. Interesting stuff, though.
Yeah.
It hit an underwater mountain, whatever that means. Was it man-made by the Chinese, or was it something?
Are we to believe it didn't see it? I mean, how does that work?
Well, when you're underwater, you're not looking out through, you know, a glass window to see what's in front of you. You're depending on your instrumentation and on your maps. Now, why didn't their sonar report, hey, there's a big mountain ahead of us? Or if it did, why was it so late in relaying the data, you know, to the navigation on the submarine? There's a lot that I'm telling about, and I understand that. But it's not exactly as they told us. You know, the details of it aren't everything.
Right. Wow. Interesting.
Okay. We have a chip shortage here. And look at the second row, second slide. That would be, when you look at it after I finish fixing it tonight, that would be about slide 659. Okay. And it says a single company in Taiwan makes 92% of the world's most sophisticated chips. Taiwan semiconductor dominance is a single point of failures for phones, cars, and nearly all sophisticated chips in the global economy, and not to mention in our nuclear, you know, our advanced weapons. And if you look at that and you think about it, this is what happens like in the car industry. I was getting our car serviced up at Toyota the other day, and I asked them, I said, hey, look, how's your used car market, you know? And they said, it's a bidding auction place. He says, people that have used cars are getting huge prices for them because the new cars don't have chips to run them. So we can't sell new cars. So the old car, you know, secondhand market is booming because of the shortage of chips. And this is already affecting, you know, obviously all the other car salespeople in the country. It affects new car sales and, distorts our economy based on used cars and trucks and things. It's very important for that, but even when we were building the EMP shield for, we still are for the government departments that we supply, we were told early in the piece, get your act together and be sure that all of your components are sourceable in the United States or its territories. Do not let it be coming in from Asia somewhere. So what, 3-4 years ago, the government knew that we were needing to cut our dependence on overseas chip supplies or component supplies for electronics. Now in slide, let's see, that would be second row, first one, which would be slide 58, when I get the numbers up there, you'll see a picture of a guy working, you know, on a microscope doing chips. So click on the article. It says, why should ordinary Americans care about the global chip crisis? And, it does tell you in the article, okay, there's a plant that we're going to build in Arizona. I'm just trying to find that here. Okay. It says that the United States lacks semiconductor manufacturing, which it really does. In 1990, we had 37% of the world's chips made here in America. And by 2020, that number diminished to 12%. So Taiwan then took over 92% of production of chips for not only the United States, but for China, the world, et cetera. And so our government started negotiations probably before President Trump, I think. I'm not sure whether it was his or, you know, the Obama thing. But we started looking at having Taiwan build a factory in Arizona. And why they stopped, I don't know. But Yeah, it was a nice plan to start making our own chips, and they're still talking about doing it now. But you know, if they take over Taiwan, if the Chinese do, we're screwed.
So why can't we? I mean, I guess we could. Is it purely economic that we're not doing it? The outsourcing of this?
Well, money does devise everything. You know, does run everything, but. It's an extremely intricate process. You know, we're talking very, very tiny chip structures. You use microscopes to, like electron microscopes, to build some of the connections on some of these IC chips that they make there. So it has to be a very clean environment. And I wonder why they would put it in such a dry place. But anyway, it's money. It's permissions from various governments, local governments, and whatever. It's classifications for security. There's just a number of factors that go into deciding whether you can have a foreign company put its chip plant here in our country. It's not like we're saying, oh, okay, we'll make a factory to make these. We're inviting the Taiwanese to do it because they have the expertise, you know.
We put a flipping men on the moon. We put men on the moon. You're telling me we can't do this? Or, no, we choose not to. Or the laws or regulations or something. I mean, I don't know. I'm real frustrated because I don't think, you know what? We would not have all those container ships out there if everything was made here, you know, or most of the stuff was made here.
But yeah, well, part of the globalist plan, you know, is to form a world economy, world manufacturing. And though the manufacturing may come from one particular area on the planet of chips, since it's a world, you know, at peace and all that kind of stuff, they're saying not to worry because, you know, we're getting the chips from a country that everyone buys from, and we've got control of that from the world government, so not a big deal. That's where it's best. That's where the people are best trained. Or we're going to go over to maybe the flower country of the United States to get grain and stuff to sell to the rest of the world because they're good at growing grain there. They have more water. So you can see how they're planning. Globalists are doing that. And they're setting up the planet to have certain regions do certain things for the good of the global community. Nice thought. And I'm sure that when the Lord takes over the planet and restructures it, that things will be done, you know, on a harmonic basis on the planet. You know, he'll be considering how it affects the environment, the planet, the life forms on the planet, and solves problems for the consumers, which would be us, of course.
Mm.
Anyway, it's another thing to put on the list of how much in trouble are we here in the United States? And boy, this certainly does it. Certainly does it.
About a minute and a half left there, my brother.
What you see on the screen here is when I started doing scientific research at the age of 2, I think it is. I was taken at my grandfather's place, and it wasn't a prison outfit. That was just what kids wore at that age in those days. There you go.
Wow. What's on either side of you there? I'm trying to make that out. Wait a minute. Oh, no. Okay, never mind. I got it. It was an optical illusion. Handsome young dude.
Yeah, well, there's that, I guess, yeah.
Love it.
But as I say, in fact, it was at that grandmother's place that I did experiments when I was probably 13-ish, 12, 13, maybe a little bit younger, with potassium permanganate and little glass bottles that you could screw the lid on and glycerin and made my own hand grenades. It actually exploded and turned me purple one day. That was in Valley Mills, Texas, years ago.
Wow. Yeah, so I've got some chemicals here. I need your formula, so I gotta. Never mind. I'm joking, of course.
I understand.
Oh, man, well, that's a great picture. Well, a lot of information just in that hour. My goodness, from the sun to temperatures to you know the threat of EMPs and folks. That's why you need to make sure you have your EMP shield. It makes a great Christmas gift. It really does. I know that I would love an EMP shield for Christmas. And I'm sure your dad, your mom, your brother, sister, kids, yeah, get them something useful.
Yeah.
All right. Stan, thank you so very much. Appreciate it.
Lord bless you. And let's have an interesting evening here and finish up the election results.
Yes.
Take care.
All right. Folks, that'll do it for me. Do it for Stan. And may God bless each and every one of you. Have a great night. Again, Wisconsin Christian News. Wow. What a great show. What a great programming. Wisconsin Christian News. Go to wisconsinchristiannews.com. And there you'll find information to watch the TV program. Have a great night.